Indulge in the Past with History on the Rocks, the podcast that brings you the fascinating tales of lesser-known history while you get ready for the weekend with your favorite drink in hand. Join Cody and Audrey as they uncork the stories that time forgot. From famous people like George Washington and his distillery to pirate queens causing mayhem on the high seas, each episode is a journey through the ages with endless possibilities. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram to keep up with the news about the latest episodes. So grab a glass, enjoy, relax, and join us every Thursday for History on the Rocks. The History on the Rocks podcast, where you'll learn about the past while sipping in the present. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. That's History on the Rocks. Learn about the past while sipping in the present.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. Your host, GP John Paz, with me today, very special guest, former 16-time USWA Tag Team Champion, USWA Middleweight Champion, TV Champion, JC Ice, a.k.a. Jamie Dundee. Jamie, welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
Man, brother, thank you very much, man. I'm glad to be here, man. It's been a long time since I've done a wrestling podcast talk show, so I'm excited about it, man, because yours is up there in the top ratings, man. I'll let you know right now.
Yes. What's going on in your world? What are you up to? I see you got a lot going on back there.
Man, I got a lot going on, man. I got my family together finally for the first time in life. All the Dundee clan is like all together, bonded. Sometimes it takes a bad sacrifice to get there, but we are there, and it's a wonderful thing, man, because you know, I was a lost soul for many years. I was just one of them old traveling wrestlers, you know. But now I understand what the world's about, man. It's about family, bro. It's about those that are there for you, whether you need them to be or not. They're always there for you, you know. That's pretty good stuff.
Now, speaking of family, how's your dad doing?
My dad is good. He just don't know it. As you know, in the wrestling world, we're tough guys. You know what I mean? He's got a stage 3 dementia, but wherever he's at, he's always smiling. Every time I see him, he just got a smile on his face and his arms are crossed. So he's probably back in the 70s or 80s, Lawler versus Dundee in Memphis. And that's what makes him smile. So I'm glad to know it, man, but he's doing all right. But then again, I mean, dementia is just one of those things that deteriorates the body and takes you down. And, but for right now, he smiles all the time and he's happy. So I'm glad to know that, you know.
Now, speaking of Lawler and Dundee, one of the greatest feuds, obviously you probably love that feud. What's your best memory of that feud?
My best memory of the Lawler Dundee feud would have to be when my beautiful mother got her head shaved in 1979 in the middle of the Mid-South Coliseum. That purchased our very first home in the United States of America. Because, you know, if some people don't know, we came from Australia. You know, I got this full-blown Australian accent right here. My family knows that we are Australian. But I'm kind of like from down south Australia. You know, I was raised in America, so I talk like a redneck. But I'm Australian by birth and redneck by choice. But my fondest memory is my mother when I woke up at 8 years old and went in to eat some cereal right before I went to school, and my mom was bald, and I said, "What happened?" And she said, "Bill lost," and then began to cry. And then we moved into a really nice home the very next week. And so Jerry Jarrett said to me, he said, "You know how hard it is to convince a woman to shave her head in the middle of the Mid-South Coliseum, especially in 1979. I said, "No, I don't." He said, "It's almost impossible." But when we said, "It'll purchase your first home," there it was, man. That's all it took, you know?
Amazing. Were you shocked that that happened? Because if you go back and look, it's like, come on, there's no way Dundee's losing this. They can't shave her head.
Of course, because they shaved Dundee's head the week before. So, you know, it was, you know, for those that don't know, it was like one of the best drawing angles in professional wrestling for 16 weeks in a row. It sold out the Mid-South Coliseum because Dundee done beat Lawler for everything he had. Lawler disappeared. Lance Russell found him drunk in a ditch. Lawler don't even drink, and now he's drunk in the ditch. The world, you know, the greatest guy on the planet is... he's lost everything, and then he comes back and he starts winning it back like Rocky Balboa, and then it gets down to Dundee's hair, and Dundee loses, and then Lawler says, "You don't have nothing I need, Dundee, go away. You get no more title shots, you get nothing, you have nothing." And he says, "I bet my wife's hair. Wasn't a person on this planet, except my mama, that ever thought that they were going to get to shave that woman's head." You know what I mean? They just had to, it was, and they didn't film it because back in them days, if you missed it, then you just missed it. So that was, I wish they would have filmed it so I would have it today to be able to see. But I have three pictures that came from that night of my mama in the ring getting her head shaved. But, you know, she's only that big because the people are so far back. And, you know, back then it was 35 millimeter Polaroid, you know, not even Polaroid, just cameras. You had to develop them and wait a week and see what you got, you know. But that is definitely one of my fondest memories. Not only is it one of my fondest memories, it was one of those groundbreaking things. You know, a woman shaved her head in pro wrestling. It only ever been done one time before, and that was with Gorgeous George Jr. back in the 50s. You know, they shaved his valet's head at the time. But I mean, that was pretty. As I say, for the divas of wrestling, you ain't got nothing on my mama, baby.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy that she even agreed to do it. But obviously the payoff was worth it for you guys, obviously.
Sure enough, it was $10,000 in 1979. $10,000 would be $100,000 today, damn near. You know what I mean? It bought our very first home, and it was a nice home, and it paid $8,000 bought it and $2,000 in the bank. That was a lot of money, man. You know, the average American was making $2.60 a day, an hour, I mean, in 1979, you know, to work 40 hours a week, you made $87. So, I mean, to make $10,000 in one night, that was big stuff, man. That's the only reason, because my mama cried for weeks. I promise you, I would just look over and she'd just be bawling. I said, "What do you cry about?" She'd say, "Oh, it's okay, son." And but I already knew. But I mean, Jerry Jarrett said, "You know how hard that is to convince a woman to shave her head in the Mid-South Coliseum in 1979? It's almost impossible."
Hey, but he did it. Now, with your dad, obviously legendary wrestler, talking about one of the best feuds versus Lawler, did you always want to be a wrestler because of your dad, or did your dad always want you to be a wrestler? Like, is that really how you got in?
You know, it kind of goes back to I don't think Dale Earnhardt Jr. really wanted to be a race car driver. He just knew that was where he was going to end up. Same as me. Growing up, you never really, you know, that's your daddy. He's your hero. You know, he's a wrestler, but I mean, I really didn't want to be a wrestler. Then my sister married beautiful Bobby Eaton when I was 12 years old. And when I saw Bobby work, and I was like, "Oh my God, this dude is the greatest wrestler on this planet." And so my brother-in-law Bobby is probably the one that made me really want to be a wrestler. But I mean, of course, my dad being my hero. So sure, it's guy, you know, like guys like Jesse James Armstrong or any of the Armstrongs or Dustin Rhodes or The Rock or any of them guys. When you're a second generation wrestler, what else are we going to be? You know, we don't know nothing else, but we don't realize it at the time. But what else are we going to do? I mean, you know, we all get in trouble for talking too much, and we're all always clowning. We're always doing little interviews, and we're wrestling with our pillows. And so, I mean, definitely it was nothing. What else could I be, man? You know?
Did he want you to be a wrestler, your dad? Like, is that something that he kind of pushed you towards, or not at all?
Never, ever was discussed. You know, my dad was born in the 40s. He's that generation, you know, they never discuss money. You just know they love you. They don't take you, they love you. You know, it's that tough love generation. My dad never, it just, one day he said to me, we was raking the yard up, and he said, I'm working for Ron Fuller as the booker. He said he wants me to turn heel. And I told him I got my boy off the streets from running wild. He said, you want to be my manager? And then I thought, wow, I don't know. And he said, son, there's more women, more fame, and more money than you can poke a stick at, boy. And I said, well, then I'll take that deal, Pop. And then I started as his manager. And from there, we came back to Memphis and switched heel. And there it was. JC Ice was born.
Who trained you to wrestle? Was it your dad?
Here's how I tell everybody. I really wasn't trained to wrestle. It was one of those things. My dad had a wrestling school. So who would you think was going to take the bumps? He wasn't going to get in there and take the bumps. He just took the money. So every single week, 30 different people, Bill would say, body slam Jamie. 30 people would body slam Jamie. Drop kick Jamie. 30 people would drop kick Jamie. Shoot Jamie in the ropes and clothesline Jamie. So before I knew it, I was really a good wrestler because I'm taking 30 times more bumps than anybody else. I'm learning, you know, it was one of those. I didn't see it coming. You know what I mean? It was just, he would throw me $100 or $50 to help out. And then, you know, I would go there and take the bumps for the people. And before I knew it, I learned how to wrestle, you know.
So when you're getting in, right, where do you first start? Like, I know managers, but where do you actually first start wrestling? Was it Memphis? Was it Lawler and Jarrett?
My first match was in Knoxville, Tennessee, when I was Bill's heel manager. I was like Bill's manager, Bill and the RPM's manager. I was like 16 years old. And Ron Fuller opened up a company called USA that is split from Continental. And my dad said, you know, like you said, I'm going to switch heel. I want you to be my manager. And so then just like 4 or 5 weeks in, you know, they had a little angle match where a midget comes to town named Butch Cassidy. And he's beating me up because I'm the little heel manager, you know, and I'm taking all the bumps and flying around. And Bill runs down, power drives him. I get the 1, 2, 3. And the people are really super mad, you know. And from that moment, and then my very first, as I call, match was against Downtown Bruno in Memphis, Tennessee, because that company closed. We go to Memphis. Bill's always a baby face, so I can't be the heel manager. So I'm just go to the ring with Bill and then switch me heel. I bring in Steve Austin, all these guys to, you know, beat my daddy up. Always, you know, the rebellious son against the good old American dad, you know.
Oh, yeah. What'd you think about Jerry Jarrett?
I loved him. I mean, without Jerry Jarrett, my family, my whole entire family, we would have never came to America. We would have never, ever, you know, the Dundee name wouldn't have been nothing because it would have been, you know, we came here for Nick Gulas. And then 2 years later, Jerry Jarrett splits from Nick Gulas. And my old man has to make a decision, you know, where do I go? And he chose the right one. Obviously, he chose Jarrett. But if Jarrett would have failed, then my family would have been on an airplane back to Australia. You see what I'm saying? So it was one of those. So I got Jerry Jarrett, one of the greatest minds in our wrestling business. Everything they're doing today is just half of what Jerry Jarrett already did in the 70s and 80s, you know?
What did you think of Lawler? Because obviously your dad and him have a ton of history, but what did you think about Jerry? And obviously your work technically worked for him as well.
Sure. I think Jerry is the king, baby. I mean, how else can you say it? He is the king. And haters are going to hate for those people that didn't like Lawler. They didn't like Lawler because Lawler was Lawler. You know, he's the king, baby. He earned it. You know, he started drawing programs when he was a kid in the crowd. And Jackie Farr, you know, it's a great story. And the guy never did drugs and never did alcohol and never did nothing. But he was the king, baby, you know. And I mean, what can you say about the guy? He sold out every building he ever worked in. You know what I mean? I mean, he's the king. He is definitely the king of wrestling. And I got nothing but love for him. You know, he was a tyrant and an asshole, just like my dad was. But it was a different time in the world. The 70s and 80s was different than 2020, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Being a smaller guy, and obviously your dad was a smaller guy, how does that go, like, psychology wise, because it doesn't seem like affected you guys? Like, nobody says, oh, they were too small. Nowadays you say a lot about guys, but not really so much for you guys, to be honest.
But we come from Memphis, and like they always said, you get sympathy on them baby faces. You take them little baby faces with them big heels and you beat them. Ricky Morton syndrome, you know. You sell like hell, you get over, you know, the people. Because I mean, honestly, in our business and our sport, the bigger the guy, the more the pounds on me, the tougher I am at the end. You know, when I make that comeback, baby, you know, it's the good old superhero story. You know, it's the Rocky Balboa syndrome. If Rocky would have just came out and beat everybody right off the rip, the movie would have sucked. You know, you got to get sympathy on that baby face. You got to make, you know, them people just, they believe. And the reason the people believe is because we believed. You know, it may have been a work, or it may have been a script rope, as they call it today, but it wasn't like that in our day. They gave you two pointers, and they said at the end of the match, do this, and the rest of it was up to you to sell your product. Because, see, what people hard to believe and understand is we went to the same town every single week. Every Monday night, Memphis. Every Tuesday night, Louisville. Every Wednesday night, Evansville. Every Saturday night, Nashville. And we had to keep the people coming back with the same 10 guys on the card. Try that. You know what I mean? The WWF comes to town once a year, and they can't sell the building out. You know, Dundee and Lawler sold out the Mid-South Coliseum 16 weeks in a row, just two dudes. You see what I'm saying? Because the people believed, and we believed. So, I mean, it was one of those superhero things, you know. You got to make that good guy just where the people say, I know he could do it, man. It's kind of like Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson's fixing to eat this dude, and this dude don't even see it. He probably does. But, I mean, so what? He's going to be the one to say, I brought Mike Tyson back. But Mike Tyson's about to kill and eat this dude. It's the good old superhero, the old, the chips are against you, man, you know, and everybody loves to see the underdog come out on top, bro.
Do you watch current wrestling? Yeah, speaking about what's going on today and how much different it is, you don't watch it at all?
No, it is so boring to me. But honestly, my whole entire life, I never watched wrestling. My mama would holler if I'm in the yard when I was a little boy playing. She'd say, your daddy's on. And I'd run in the house and watch that segment. Or they would holler, your brother-in-law Bobby's on. And I'd run in there and watch that WCW or the NWA back then on TNT or whatever, on that Georgia Championship Wrestling. I'd run in the house and watch that on TBS and go back out. Never really, because, you know, when you live it, it doesn't seem nothing great to you. Like people in Memphis, a lot of people in Memphis never been to Graceland, you know. And when you live there, it just seems like it's no big deal, you know. But I never watched it then and now, unless I was on it. Now, if I was on it, I was my biggest fan. I can sit here and watch myself for hours. I love me. I really do.
So you weren't like a real big watcher of wrestling at all? It's just outside of Bobby Eaton and your dad, you really didn't watch as much.
No, I didn't have to, because once you watch the best, what do you want to watch all that other garbage for? I mean, honestly, yeah, I'm not trying to sound like I'm a egotistical guy, but it's the truth. Bobby Eaton's the greatest wrestler on this planet ever, bar none. Bobby Eaton can make a broomstick look like he's a world champion, you know. And my dad's speaks for himself. He's Bill Dundee, you know. After you see the best, why do I want to watch anything else? You know, and today's wrestling, it's not their fault, bless their heart. But I mean, it's the most garbage, boring ass stuff. It is what it is. You know, in our day, they said, here's the finish. And we went to the ring. And if the people, like I said, every single week in the same building with the same fans, that's hard to do, man. That's real hard to do, to make them people come back. And that's like going to the same movie over and over and over again. How many times did everybody go see the Titanic? They saw it twice, maybe three times most, because we all knew the outcome was the boat's going to sink. And the same as wrestling. We had to, if you thought what you thought was coming, never was we going to give that to you, man. Because once we give that to you, then you call the shots. And once the marks call the shots, the show's over, just like it is today. You know, it's nobody's fault. And but wrestling's like anything, like magic, it's like mafia, it's like anything. Once you let the outside world in, once everybody can do it, it's over. Michael Jordan made that look easy, jumping from that free throw line and dunking that ball, but try that one time. And the same as wrestling. If the people can call it, then it's over. Why do you want to buy a ticket to watch it? Because you already know the outcome. And the same as in our world, we had to do it every week in the same building in front of the same people. And that's just, I don't even think people even understand how hard that really is, man.
You got to get them keep coming back. And you mentioned sure. Bobby Eaton. I brought Bobby Eaton in a few years ago for a Midnight Express reunion. And I was talking him up about how great he was. He did not want to hear it for 2 seconds. He did not want to hear how great he was. He's not the best. He didn't have the best part. Everything I said, he's like, no, no, no. Like, and he didn't want to have anything to do with it. He kept shooting me down. I was like, Bobby, come on. So humble.
Bobby is the most humble. The most humble. He's kind of like Rey Mysterio. Rey Mysterio is another god of my sport, of my business. And is so humble. They credit everyone else when really Bobby Eaton is bar none one of the greatest, if not the greatest wrestler ever in our business. And if nobody understands that, go watch Bobby Eaton videos. He can make the worst wrestler in the world look like they're worth $1 million, man. And that's hard to do. But also, Bobby was such a humble, such a kind. The world lost something when they lost Bobby Eaton, man. If there was a whole bunch of Bobby Eatons in this world, it'd be a whole lot better place, believe that.
Even Cornette was trying to pump him up, and he would not accept it. He was like, no.
So he wouldn't take the compliment. Not one time can I remember Bobby thinking Bobby was who Bobby really was. You know, Bobby, if Bobby could see himself like we all saw him, then Bobby would understand. But to Bobby, it was all Bonesy. Bonesy was what he called me. He married my sister when I was 13, and I'd had appendicitis, and I came out of the hospital, and I probably was about 78, 80 pounds, and he called me Bones. So my whole life, he would call me Bonesy. He'd say, Bonesy, I got to go on the road. Roll Bobby Lee a joint. Roll Bobby Lee some joints. So I'd roll up a few joints for Bobby Lee so he could go on the road. You know, that's one of those things that you know, he married my sister, and that dude was my hero, man. From that, I miss him every day, man. It's one of those. If anybody ever met Bobby Eaton or knew Bobby Eaton, they know exactly what I'm talking about. And if they don't, I'm sorry you never got the enjoyment to meet one of the best person on the planet, bro, for real.
God-tier wrestler, too. So many tag teams have stolen so many moves from that guy. Oh. It's unbelievable. And even just a regular wrestler, so many moves have been stolen from him. It's crazy.
Sure enough, that guy was the one that they took to do the video games. You know, Bobby would put the suit on and come off the rope and do every single move. That way they could put him in the video games. You know, he had the little suit on because Bobby was so good that he knew the moves would be great even on the video game.
Right.
Bobby was just so... But, I mean, here's the thing. Anybody, no matter what profession you're in an entertainment profession, if you have the love for it and the passion for it, it shows. And, you know, whether you made $1 million or $5 or whatever, when wrestling, you know, when you love it so much, you the passion, it shows. You know, if you're there just, you know, oh, God, this sucks and bitch all the way, well, then you're in the wrong sport, man. You know, when you start wrestling, it's like anything. You wrestle for $5, $10. You wrestle for free just to wrestle because you love it so much. And then comes the egos and the money and all that shit. And Bobby Eaton never cared about either one of those things, man. You know, he just he did what he loved to do every single day. And that was to perform and wrestle. And he was definitely the best of the best, man.
Speaking of one of the best, you mentioned Steve Austin before, and obviously when you get into USWA, kind of involved with him, teaming with him against your dad and against Bruno and stuff like that. What was Steve Austin like at this point? Because you can see some potential, right? And obviously he became one of the biggest stars ever.
Oh, my God, very much. Not only see potential, I know. I'm only 17, 16 years old, and I'm saying this dude is the shit. This dude right here, as soon as somebody sees this dude, he's gone, brother, and he's going straight to the top. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But, I mean, he was an All-American football player. He was the real deal, man. You know, he gives 110%, whether you know, anybody else does. If there's one person or 15,000 in the building, but Steve performs. Steve gives it all, man. You know, and he's one of them kind of people that he don't know nothing else. You know, he gives it all or none. You know what I mean, man? He definitely is the real deal, man. And he deserves it, and he's earned it. You know, and there's a lot of people in the wrestling business that have earned it, and there's a lot of people that ain't. You know, and definitely Steve Austin, you know, he paid his dues. He starved to death. He moved in hotels. He lived in cars. You know, he did the whole nine yards, man. And it is what it is. But definitely I saw it from a very young age because, you know, I was born in this business. You know, my family came from Australia, America in 75 when I was 4 years old. I started selling kisses for $1 at 8 years old. I used to wear these little jumpsuits back here like my daddy had, and I would go walk around the crowd, and the girls would say, "Little Dundee, can I have a hug?" And I said, "Pop, them old people smell, man. They smell like cigarettes and beer." And he said, "We'll charge them." So from a very young age, at 8 years old, I thought, man, I could do this the rest of my life. I would sell kisses for $2 and hugs for $1. And they'd give me $5, and they'd say, "Little Dundee, give me two of each." I'd say, "Oh, but okay." And so, I've been entertaining my whole life. That's all I ever know. But Steve Austin, when he came through, was one of them people that I knew it. Everybody in the crowd knew it. The building knew it, you know, because like I said, in the South, them people, they become part of your family. They come there every single week, and you begin to know these people. You know them by name. If they're not in the seat the day of the week of the show, you know something's wrong or they're sick. Or you know what I mean? I mean, it's one of those because they are – as much as part of our show as the referee or the guy in the ring. And even those people, they'd say, boy, Dundee, you got you one this time. Even the marks, as they call them, would know that Stone Cold was definitely going to become the man.
And you mentioned Steve being poor at one point, and he talks about that, how he's starving and eating potatoes and all that other stuff. What's the real story with him and Jeff Jarrett? Because Jeff always says, oh, there's no heat there. But Austin was saying, and a bunch of people have mentioned this story, that, and Austin, I guess, has repeated it as well, that Jarrett, when Austin was looking at his check, just like, oh, man, I was hoping we were getting more money. Jarrett goes, if you look at it, it ain't going to change. Basically,
But see, that was kind of an old Memphis thing. When guys come to Memphis, but Steve probably took that as a, because Jeff's making $2,000 a week and he's drawing $600. I mean, that's just the truth. You know what I mean? I mean, but here's the thing. It's Jarrett Promotions. And if I got my kids there, believe me, I'm taking care of my kids first, just like anybody else would. You know what I mean? I'm not mad at them for that. It's no, you know, the promoter's the smartest guy on the card. Look at Don King. Don King never got in a ring and threw a punch at nobody and used to make $14 million on a Mike Tyson fight. You know what I mean? But also, Steve knew that Jeff was making two, and I believe he took it as a F you, as a ha-ha. And really it wasn't. It was kind of like a Memphis rib. Dutch Mantel one time, Jerry said, Dutch, are you boys on them damn steroids and smoking that pot? He said, smoking pot and steroids. He said, we can't even afford food working for you. So it was one of those. But Jeff drove a white Cadillac with gold trim. I mean, a white Lincoln with gold trim very first year in the business, you know. And it was like, everybody's like, come on, man, give me a break. A blonde-haired, blue-eyed millionaire kid named Jared, and you think he's going to draw money in Memphis? Ain't going to happen. The brothers in the hood hated him from the get-go. And so they would bring guys in and feed him. And Steve, I believe Steve took that the wrong way, because Jeff really didn't mean that. Probably that was just an old saying. The more you look at it, it ain't going to change, son. Put it back in your bag. It ain't going to change, because everybody knew when you went to Memphis, it was $40 a night. That was it. I had a cop pull me over one time, me and Wolfie, and he said, who owns this hunk of shit car? I said, that was mine, sir. And he goes, I heard you boys, wrestling boys, make $40 a night. And I said, yes, sir. He said, I wouldn't drive this hunk of shit from Jackson to Humboldt for $40. And that's only like 13 miles or something. And we were driving from Nashville to Memphis for $40. And he said, I ain't even going to give you a ticket because you can't afford to pay for it. So you gentlemen slow down and be careful. And he let us go because he knew what we made. And he knew that we couldn't afford to pay the ticket. So he was a cool cop for that. But I mean, I saw the video where it said the top 10 people Steve Austin hate, right? And I could, when it got to Jeff, I was like, wow, I didn't know that. It wasn't brought to the forefront or nothing. But I guess in Memphis, you know, I'm Dundee's kid, Jeff's Jarrett's kid, Lawler's, you know, Brian Christopher. We already know we're fine. You know what I mean? So I guess as another person on the outside looking in, I can now see it. Because, you know, Jeff always beat Steve every night, yada, yada, yada. You know, I guess it's one of those, you know, now what you going to do, dude? I earned mine. So I saw that same video. I don't know if Steve actually, because you got to think back, man. Is when everybody starts, everybody's got to kiss somebody's ass they don't want to, no matter what it is. If you work at the donut store, if you work at the gas station, or if you're a freaking movie star, you gotta feed somebody. You know, if somebody above you, you got to kiss their ass and keep on going that you really don't want to. So I guess, but I never knew there was no live heat like that. And I saw a video where they do a talk, like they do a podcast together. Either Jeff goes on Steve's show, I think, at a Skull Bone podcast, and they. Yep. I think they worked it out or something, which I'm glad, because, you know, I got nothing but love for Jeff Jarrett. I understand, you know, we all of us grew up in the South as second generation wrestlers. We all, you know, it was a little harder on us than most. Most people probably don't believe that, but it really was, because our dads are the mega superstars, or your dad's the promoter that owns the place. So how can you beat that? You know, you got to impress them, you know, you got to get daddy's approval. And I just don't know if some of us ever got it, you know. I just don't know.
Do you think that affected you guys like you and Brian Christopher?
It, as they say, you meet the same people on the way up as you do on the way back down. They've always said that in life, no matter what it is you do. That's why you got to treat everybody the same on the way up as you do on the way back down, because you never know who's going to be in charge when it's at the right time. But I believe Brian Christopher definitely got a lot more heat than I did. I got my own heat just because I'm a loud mouth and I don't shut up and I don't care what nobody thinks because I'm Bill Dundee's boy. And that's just I don't care. You know what I mean? And the rest of it is you can't get no better than what I got. My daddy's Bill Dundee and my brother-in-law's beautiful Bobby Eaton. Ain't nothing you can tell me about my business. Nothing. Nothing. You know what I mean? I mean, I've been on it since I was born, and those people are my family, and those are the ones I saw every day of my life. So I don't care what people think about me. I don't care if people agree with my opinion. When I'm asked a question, I give what I feel to be the right answer. And if it's wrong or you don't care, I don't care about that. I don't go back and read comments on things I put out on Facebook. I don't care about none of that. I really don't. I'm not asking for nobody's opinion or approval. I'm just telling people what I feel and how I feel at this moment about the situation. And I've always been that way. Brian was a little different. Brian was raised with his mother, so he saw his dad on certain days. And it was a difference. I saw my old man every night. He was a prick every night. If the town didn't draw, he came home and took it out on us. You know, that's just how life was back in that time. You know, Brian only saw it, but Brian got a lot of heat he didn't deserve over his dad. Because a lot of people, as they say, haters, they're not man enough to say things that I say in the world. I say shit, and I don't care who it offends. I don't care who's mad about it. That's how I feel about the moment or about my opinion at that second. And I don't care about it. Brian got a lot of heat for things that his dad did to other people that Brian didn't deserve the heat from, but they weren't man enough or had the balls to say it to Lawler. You see what I'm saying?
You know, he had to deal with a lot of heat and stuff that wasn't necessarily his fault.
Very, very much so. Brian got a lot of heat from his old man. Same as I did. But my dad basically was, you know, it's kind of like me. He was straight up for a straightforward kind of guy. And, you know, like when he would go into a new company as a booker, my dad would fire everybody, but he would have him a job in Memphis or in Louisiana or somewhere waiting. You know what I mean? And then he would bring in a new crew, and that's what you got to do to reboot. But Brian got a lot of heat because of his dad, because most people ain't got the guts or the balls to confront Lawler. So they just take it out on Brian. You know, and Brian got a lot of heat that really he didn't deserve. But Brian was an asshole, too. So, I mean, he was a Lawler. You know, Lawlers and Dundee, they're like the Hatfields and the McCoys, man. You know, we don't want nobody messing with them, but you know, our whole life it's been that way. You know, the Lawler Dundee feud it goes from my mom and his mom all the way down to our grandchildren, I think.
Definitely. With Brian Lawler, obviously Brian Christopher, with his death, do you think it was a suicide, or do you think there was something else at play? Because Jerry obviously thinks something else was at play.
Of course, everybody would think that as your child. Nobody wants to think that their child would take their own life, you know. But Brian had been at my house for a few months prior to his death, and he had stayed with me for weeks and weeks. And Brian was in a dark place, man. And a lot of people get in a dark place. It don't matter how much money you got, what color you are, what religion you are, where you're from. Everybody gets into a dark place sometime in their life. They just do. And you know, and Brian... I love Brian. Brian is my brother. I miss Brian a lot. I think of Brian all the time, but also I'm mad at Brian. To me, Brian did it. Brian took the what I call the bitch way out, the coward's way out. And that wasn't Brian. Brian was no coward, but he, you know, it was one of those things, you know, when you're so far down in life, you know, everybody's bottom's different. And Brian just felt that Brian, nothing Brian did was correct. You know, everything Brian did at the beginning was right. Brian worked out, Brian trained, Brian had a big house, Brian had the big cars, Brian had the big paychecks. And it was kind of like Brian was looking for something that he couldn't get. And I don't know if it was the approval from daddy. I don't know what it is. You know what? I just know that me and Brian just spoke many, many, many days and nights on a level, just two brothers. You know what I mean? We grew up the same people. Our dads were the exact same people. They were egotistical pricks that were above the world. And it's hard to separate that on family and all, you know. And that's the sad part about it. With anybody that's in the entertainment profession, after the big ride to the top goes, after that, there's only one place to go, and that's down. And most people can't handle the fall from grace, you know. Most people can. That's why most wrestlers OD and die alone in a hotel room at 35 or 40 years old, because once you meet the top, there's nowhere to go but down, and most people can't handle that. You know, I guess I was a little different. I accepted that everything that happened in my career or in my life, I accept that it's because of what I did, you know, and first and foremost, you've got to admit to yourself it's your fault, because we all are in control of our own lives, our own destiny. You know, when the road takes a fork, it's your choice which way in that fork you go. Sometimes it's the right way, sometimes it's the wrong way. But I mean, there's so many people. Brian was just, to answer your question, yes, I believe that 100% in my heart that Brian took his own life and he hung himself. And I believe that, and I'll always believe that. And most people, especially as a father or as a, you don't want to believe that. You just don't want to believe that. But here's the thing, man. It is what it is. And the bottom line is nothing's going to bring Brian back. So it's a tragedy. Once again, if anybody hasn't seen the Iron Claw, it's such a tragedy, man. You know, the life, the entertainment world, it's just so, that's why I hate it so much as I love it, because it's just never ends well, man, for those that can't handle that fall from grace, man. You know, you just, me, I accept it. I know my wrestling world's over, but I don't care, because I had a hell of a ride and I had a hell of a lot of fun. And like I said, millions of times, and I'll say it again, Bill Dundee and Bobby Eaton are my family, and we were the top of wrestling at the time. You know, there was none better than our family. And, now they're all gone, and I don't wrestle no more, and I don't miss it. I really don't. I welcome what comes now, which is family, and that's another thing in the wrestling world. It's all about loyalty and family and all that. But in the end, man, yeah, there ain't none, bro. You know, there's no. I saw a thing the other day with Tommy Dreamer and Paul Heyman and all them sitting down at the table, and Tommy Dreamer begins to cry because he says, "We all know you screwed us, Paul. We all know you took our money, but it was the greatest time in my life, and I wouldn't take nothing for it." And you know, people, those that have never been able to walk the aisle and feel that rush, that adrenaline pump that you get, man, from 16,000, 5,000, all the way up to 80,000 people at the Alamo Dome, you know, when they're booing you when you're a heel, or they're cheering you when you're a baby face, bro, there's nothing more exciting and nothing better than that. But all good things must end, man. And that's the only bad part about becoming a celebrity. Everybody wants what's on the other side of the fence. Everybody thinks it's, oh, I can't wait to be great. But, you know, what about when it's over? Because nobody ever looks at that side. Nobody ever says, what happens when I go to the top and then I start to head back down, you know? Nobody ever sees that side. Nobody wants to think of that side. But I guess to answer your question, I myself 100% believe that, yes, Brian took his own life, and I hate it, and I'm mad about it now, because to me it was a coward's way out, man, and Brian was no coward. But, you know, you never know what nobody else is going through, you know?
Absolutely. Now, just changing gears here, because obviously PG-13, sure. Everybody knows JC Ice and Wolfie D. Guys, sure. Wrestled everywhere, WWE, ECW, WWF, Smoky, sure. Mountain, USWA.
Sure enough.
How did the team come together? Why Wolfie, and why did the chemistry work so well together?
It's one of those things that somebody else has to see it. You don't see it. Like, me and Wolfie were wrestling in these outlaw towns against each other. He was Sir Wolfie D. He had the shorts on, and, you know, he was just the little rapper kind of guy, because that's where he grew up. You know, I grew up in Hendersonville, Tennessee. I was a country music kind of kid, you know, but I was still coming off of the JC Ice, the Ice Ice Baby thing that I was doing on USWA. And so me and Wolfie are wrestling the outlaw towns, and a guy named Chris Champion says, "You know what? You two should do that together." Said, "Y'all shouldn't work each other. You should do it together, because you're both good at it." And tag teams are, it's hard to take two guys and just stick them together and make it work. You know what I mean? Yep. A lot of people just sticking two guys together, it just ain't going to work. But me and Wolfie, from the moment we started working each other, and then the moment we started working together, it just clicked, man. It was kind of like Ricky and Robert. You know, Ricky and Robert just clicked, bro. And me and Wolfie really started. So we got together. We started doing it, working in the outlaw towns. And we did an outlaw show with Jeff Jarrett. And Jeff said, "Man, have y'all showed this to my dad?" Said, "This is good stuff, man." And so I said, "No." He said, "Man, show this to my dad." So I called Jerry Jarrett. And for like 2 or 3 weeks, I call him, and he says he's going to meet us. And I drive from Kentucky, and Wolfie lives in Nashville. I meet Wolfie, and then he gives us some excuse. "I'm sick this week. I need to do this week," yada, yada. And so finally, like the third week, I'm like, "Look, bro, come on, Jerry, just give me 5 minutes of your time, man. That's all I need, 5 minutes. If you don't like it, we'll go away. You know, I'm tired of driving down here and you just blowing us off." So, of course, he lets us come into the mansion, and we go up to the big mansion, and I say, Wolfie, if we can get him to smile, he'll give us a job. So we go in there, and we put on the shorts, and we put on all that stuff, and we had little fake gold teeth, and we put them in, and he's just looking at it, and then I put the hubcap around my neck. He says, what is that? And I say, that's the finish. And then he starts to smile, and I tell Wolfie, he's going to give us a job. And he said, this is what I'm going to do. He said, boys, we're going to make videos for 4 weeks. Well, of course, being two young guys, I don't want to make videos. I want to wrestle. He said, just listen to me. We're going to make videos for 4 weeks, and we're going to run them for 4 weeks straight. And by the fifth week, when you get there, these people will be happy as hell to see you. And sure enough, once again, something Jerry Jarrett comes up with obviously works, because that dude was so, his mind was so, he could think of 6 or 10 weeks ahead and see it, you know what I mean, when nobody else could even imagine it. You know, he was just that good. And sure enough, when me and Wolfie hit that TV studio, everybody was going, hey, oh, hey, you know, and they never built me as Bill Dundee's son or nothing at that time. You know, we just showed up and we're two little skinny kids, but kind of like the old mosquito deal, you know, we just stick, take all the bumps, fly everywhere, and then hit them with a hubcap, 1, 2, 3, and run away. And the people were just, they just loved it. It got over like hell. Jerry's like, man, we're going to have to switch you boys. These people love y'all. Kind of like Stone Cold, as you were talking about, Steve. That was a WWF made Steve with the screw you and the FUs and the beer. They wanted him to be a heel, and the world loved it because that's really what the world's about, you know.
So obviously you and Wolfie, then great tag team, great chemistry. Do you still talk to Wolfie today? What's the relationship like, sure, with Wolfie now?
Sure. Oh yeah. I'll always, you know, me and Wolfie are, we have two different lives. You know, he still wrestles sometimes, but he just had hip surgery. But I mean, he still entertains. And in me, I just, it's one of those, because for those that don't know, JC Ice, he was a crazy dude, man. You can go back and watch some things on YouTube of JC Ice. That dude's crazy, man. So I try to keep that dude, you know, put away, because like I say, it's about family now. And some things you do in life, you just can't take back. And, you know, JC Ice was crazy. That dude didn't give a, he don't care. He don't care about nothing, but he loves to have fun. He's wilder than a buck, and he'll say anything to anybody. And so I try to keep that dude put away. So every now and then, like in the last year, I went with Wolfie, and we went did a couple conventions in New York and stuff like that. And, you know, I got to see a bunch of guys I haven't seen in 20 years, you know. But as far as there's nothing left in that world for me, man. You know what I mean? I did WrestleMania. Once you go to the top, there's nowhere to go but down. You know, I mean, I would have liked to have done 5 WrestleManias, but it don't matter. I did a WrestleMania, and most of the people watching this show will never get to say they did, you know. Absolutely. So to me, for sure. So, I mean, I went to the Super Bowl of wrestling, and I accept that it's over for me. It's over for me for decisions I made. It's over for me for my drug abuse. It's over for me. But here's the thing. I'm glad it's over, because all that comes together. Every time I go to a wrestling show, it brings back the JC Ice, and I want to drink, and I want to snort coke, and I want, and so I don't have time for that no more. You know what I mean, man? I've been clean and sober for 15 years of my life, and, you know, it's a slow life compared to the life that we led. It's really slow and boring, but I talk to Wolfie at least a couple of times a year for sure. You know, Christmas, his birthday, you know, things like that, because that dude will always be a part of my life. I love that guy, you know, but we have different choices in life today. And we you know, my life is slow and humble now, and I kind of like it, because I never had a slow and humble life. You know, my life has always been over the top and always loud and just always just JCI's Dundee and wrestling every night and performing. You know, I went to my first concert just like 8 years ago. You know, I was like 44 years old or something before I went to my very first concert, because people don't understand that. But my family and my life, I was the concert. So there was no time for other things, you know. It was wrestling Memphis on Monday, Louisville Tuesday, Evansville Wednesday, Nashville Saturday, and then, you know, we started getting over. We started flying to ECW on Friday. At one time, me and Wolfie worked Monday Night Raw for WWF, Tuesday and Wednesday for Lawler. Then we get on the plane and go Thursday and Friday and Saturday for ECW, and then Sunday for Smoky Mountain, and then start again. We did that for a long time. That's 5 major organizations in a week, bro. You know, it's kind of hard to fathom now. I'm like, wow, man. And plus, I'm so out of shape. And I just, it's something that, you know, I love it. I love it. I'm thankful for it. I'm thankful for all my fans that were there. But to me, my life in the wrestling world's over, man. You know, and I'm not mad about it. I love it. My granddaughter's here visiting now, and you know, she's seeing all my stuff for the first time in my I Love Jamie room, and she's like, you know, The Rock, and you know Stone Cold, you know this guy, and you know, that's pretty cool to me. But you know, it's just such a terrible world in the end. I'm so glad I'm away from it, but I'm thankful for all it gave my family, for real.
You mentioned WrestleMania, you mentioned WWF. How did you guys get into WWF? Is that the connection with Jared McMahon, the USWA thing?
It was kind of both. It was kind of actually Jimmy Cornette. Wolfie was talking with Jimmy Cornette about stuff from OVW or something. Cause you know, at that time I was in jail. And so Wolfie was doing the Slash gimmick, you know, and he was working in OVW. And by the way, like I say, John Cena, I ain't mad at you, but I still think you stole my gimmick, bro. I mean, OVW, you were Wolfie was Slash and you were the Prodigy. And all of a sudden you got a pair of shorts on and a spinner. You upgraded the hubcap. I ain't mad at you, bro. But I mean, come on, you know, it is what it is. But at that time, Wolfie was talking with you know, of course, like you said, Vince was bringing in every Monday night. There was a new WWF star working Lawler in Memphis, and Vince was there, and he watched us work. And when we did the little Smoking Gun deal, you know, they brought us in as the Chance. We worked with the Smoking Guns. Excuse me. And he just said, wow, they're just really small. Because, you know, especially up there, we were really, really small for up there. But the Lightning Kid, you know, Sean had just got a little break there as the 1-2-3 Kid, you know. So they were bringing in the junior heavyweights or whatever they called them. And really, we were small guys up there. I mean, them guys are monsters, bro. That ring is, you know, 21 by 21 or something. You know, most rings are 16 by 16. You know, it ain't two steps across their ring. It's 3.5. You see what I'm saying? It's because there was big dudes up there, man. I mean, this, you know, the Undertaker and Yokozuna and just the Road Warriors. And I mean, all them dudes are monsters, bro. You know, the smallest guy besides me and Whoopi was Paul Bearer. And he was damn near 6 foot at 300 pounds, you know. And so I was like, wow. And we really realized how small we was when you go up there in that land of giants. But also, we take that Memphis style, and you can use that in anywhere on this planet. You can take Memphis style wrestling and stick it in any company, and it will get over. But you can't bring any company style wrestling and bring it to Memphis and think it'll get over. It ain't going to work, because Memphis has seen so much and done so much and been through so much of the wrestling entertainment world that it's hard to get Memphis to believe or buy anything, you know? And so we could take our style anywhere. We went to Mexico with it, Puerto Rico, Canada. We went to everywhere we went. They would say, you do you. You know, ECW had never seen nothing like me and Wolfie, you know, with the dancing and the bullshit and then the comedy. And you never seen nothing like that. You know, every single match, they're flying over the rope and they're going through chairs and tables. And so when we brought our little funny Memphis style, it got over because they never saw nothing like that, you know. And that's kind of like what did our whole career, I guess, the hubcap and the difference. Everybody expects a wrestler to be a big, huge, jacked up dude. And here's these two little skinny guys that just fly, take bumps everywhere, but they always win because they cheat, you know, and that's how the South survived. You know, you got to get sympathy on the baby faces and heat on the heels, or the South wasn't going to draw.
Very, very true. What did you think about, like you're mentioning, obviously John Cena, which he did. I mean, he stole the gimmick. But what about the Nation of Domination, the rap, that stuff? Did you like that or no?
Me, myself, just want to get paid. You know, I'm like I said, at that time in life, I'm 25, 26 years old. Every one of them big mega stars, my dad had already fired. You know what I mean? Shawn Michaels came to my dad and got his first job through Jose Lothario when my dad was booking Bill Watts in Louisiana. You know, The Undertaker came through Memphis as Mean Mark Callis. Or, you know, I knew every one of these dudes when they were first and second matches. So, you know, when we went to the WWF, I guess it was kind of one of those, I felt I was a bigger star than them. You know what I'm saying? Because I knew my dad fired all these dudes. These dudes can't tell me nothing about my sport or my business that I didn't already know. And then I think we were supposed to go there as the be quiet, shut up little guys. And when we got there, but like I said, my reputation precedes me, man. When you call Jamie Dundee, it ain't like you go, I wonder who this guy is. It ain't like they didn't know who they were calling. When they called Dundee to fly up there, and Wolfie, you know, when we landed, they flew us up to Connecticut, and they give us some money and say, go buy these outfits. We buy the trench coats and the bag, and then they fly us up and they say, write a rap song. And I was like, write a rap song? What is he talking about? Wolfie's like, I don't know. He wants us to write a rap song. So Whoopi growing up in that generation of rappers and stuff, you know, Run DMC and Aerosmith was the closest I got to rapping, you know, when they did Walk This Way. You know, I grew up in Hendersonville, Tennessee with country music, Hank Williams Jr. and David Allen Coe and Bobby Bear and, and so my neighbors were Conway Twitty and friggin' Johnny Cash. So that's what I grew up on. But Wolfie grew up on the other side of Nashville. So he knew the rap. So Wolfie wrote the rap song. And it took him a while to get me in the rhythm of being able to sing that song, you know, it paid us $500 a night to perform, and we could wrestle anywhere else we wanted to within our contract, and they pay for everything. Shit, let me take that deal. So I learned to rap. And so I tell my kids and my grandkids, your daddy's a professional rapper. Professional means you get paid. I got paid to rap. That's what I did. I was a rapper. I didn't know it, but Wolfie actually was the rapper of the duo. You know, after we did the gimmick in the buildings, when I went in my car, I put in Hank Williams Jr. or David Allen Coe or, you know, country redneck stuff. And that's what I jammed on all the way home, where, you know, the rapping gimmick was just a gimmick to me. But I did, you know, whatever. I'm an entertainer, man. On Jerry Springer, I played every part you could play. You know, in the circus, I was a clown and I got shot out of a cannon. I mean, you know, I'm an entertainer. You can get me and ask me to do any part and I can do it believable. I promise, because that's what I do. I've done it since I was a little bitty boy. And entertainers are just, that's what we do. We entertain, you know.
So if they say, hey, you guys got to take a beating for the Legion of Doom, you guys have no problem taking a beating from those two monsters.
None whatsoever. But I promise, like, if anybody watches that match, when he throws Wolfie to the corner, I sold Hawk. I said, all I want is this karate spot, bro. And sure enough, he's trying to snap mare me in and go to the finish. And I'm like, hell no, let me get this in. And that's the entertainer in me. By any means necessary, I got away from him and I got that karate spot in. I did my cartwheel. He clotheslined me and the people went nuts and won. 1, 2, 3, because they're the Road Warriors. I mean, they're the Road Warriors. And Road Warriors had beat Moses and Jesus, I think, one time back in WrestleMania 14 or something. I don't know. But I know them dudes are gods. They're mega gods in my sport. They beat everybody in the world. And so for people say, oh, PG-13, y'all got jobbed out by the Road Warriors. No, we didn't. We got beat by the Road Warriors. There's a difference, brother. The Road Warriors are the Road Warriors, man. That is Hawk and Animal, man. They have beat everybody on this planet, and they will beat you and anybody else that don't like it. And that's to me, it was one of my greatest matches ever. As far as we were on WrestleMania against the Road Warriors, and then we did a Monday Night Raw against the Road Warriors. Not many people are going to get to say they did that, man.
Very true.
But we did. Sure enough, we did. And I was honored to do it. I couldn't wait to do it. It was the greatest. And once again, I'm an entertainer. I said, damn it, Hawk, I'm getting this spot in. And then it was like on WrestleMania, we're supposed to take the double clothesline. We're on the shoulders. You know, Whoopi's on Ahmed's shoulders. I'm on Animal's shoulders. The double clothesline, they said hit and roll. So we double clothesline, we hit, Whoopi rolls, and I just lay there. An old Hawk comes by, and he goes, roll, Dundee. And I'm laying there, and I said, Hawk, I'm never going to be on WrestleMania again. I ain't rolling nowhere. I'm going to get my time. He said, good shit, brother. And I just lay there until the whole nation comes back down, drags me out of the ring and hauls my ass back up. I don't care. It's WrestleMania. I'm getting my time, baby. You know, because it is what it is. You know, that's WrestleMania, top of the world, mama. You know, it don't get no bigger than that in my world, man. None. Nothing's bigger than the WrestleMania aisle, you know.
Yeah, WrestleMania 13, that Chicago street fight is awesome. The Nation against LOD and Ahmed, yeah.
Yes, sir. And at the end, they said, y'all are going to take that double clothesline, y'all hit and roll. And I thought, I ain't rolling. That's the Road Warriors, baby. I'm laying here until they come and get me. I don't care if they were sweeping the building up. I was still going to be laying there if they didn't come and get me. But that right there is a believable thing because they're the Road Warriors, bro. You know, it's WrestleMania in Chicago. They're returned back at WrestleMania for the Road Warriors. Come on, man. It don't get no bigger than that, baby.
Hell yeah, definitely. Were you supposed to wrestle them again before you guys left or no?
Well, when we did the Monday Night Raw job thing, that was because they cut a long story short, they fired us without, you know, they don't have the balls to tell you you're fired. They just take your plane tickets back and say, oh, we got to upgrade them or some shit like that. And then all of a sudden we're working all three companies at that time. We're working USWA, we're working WWF and ECW. And we're starting an angle with the Eliminators. We were showing the videos where the Eliminators never beat us in Memphis. You know, I give credit to Cronus and Perry Saturn. for getting me and Wolfie over in Memphis, because those are two big, tough, badass dudes for real. And the world knew that, and they were stiff, bro. And when me and Wolfie, you know, come, we leave Puerto Rico, Wolfie goes back, and then I come back in, me and Wolfie team back up, and we beat them Eliminators. I believe it shot us to the next level, man, for real. The people said, shit, them boys is pretty tough, whooping them Eliminators, because Memphis wrestling, believe me, they know, and they know when somebody's stiff, somebody, you know, they see it every week for 40 years. You better be able to convince them people that what you're saying is believable. And so them damn eliminators, I give them credit for putting us to the next level. And then I give all credit where credit is due to the Rock and Roll Express when they put me and Wolfie over in the Memphis territory when they come in from Smoky Mountain. It just closed down and we brought them all in. And when the Rock and Roll put us over, that sent us to the superstar level, I guess you could call it, you know. Because it's hard to make them Memphis people believe in you, man, especially because you know how many things and how many people they have seen come through, you know, in 40 years. They have seen a lot of stuff. So to make the Memphis people believe and convince them, like I said, you have to believe, and we believed.
Now, with WWF, though, just to go back, technically you're fired, really? And I mean, the plane ticket thing, I guess, is a Jim Ross. I don't know if it's like a part rib, part whatever, but it's a firing, right?
Well, I'd already, some people know, whatever. I showed up to a Monday Night Raw with an $800 cab bill, and I was like 10 hours late, and I was all drugged up and messed up and missed my airplane flight and just all kind of stuff. But anyway, and that's where the Ken Shamrock story comes in, where I challenged Kenny, and it's a funny story. But anyway, so that was probably the nail in the coffin. And then, you know, they were already going to disband the Nation because they were going to make the Black Gang, the Mexican Gang, the White Gang, you know what I mean, which is what they did. And honestly, me and Wolfie's, probably our spot was going to be the spot that the Headbangers were in, you know, the Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher. That was actually where me and Wolfie were supposed to go when the Nation split up. We were kind of going to become, you know, like the Headbangers. We were going to go off with the Headbangers and work, and Philip LaFon and Doug Furness, you know, off in that area, and let them gangs be formed, you know what I'm saying? And because of the plane, I blame it on the plane flight and the taxi bill and all that stuff, and being messed up and passed out on the floor and all that, that we were fired then. But it takes, you know, it takes another 3 months to work you out of the angle, you know what I'm saying? And so, but then when they came to us that day, we were working with the Eliminators in the main event of ECW. And then they wanted us to go out on this Monday Night Raw and get squashed by the Road Warriors in like 90 seconds, right?
Yep.
And so I'm no dummy, you know. So I was like, oh, whoa. No, we're not doing that. Let's go, Wolfie. We're leaving. We're not doing that shit. I'm not going to give up my ECW run for these jackoffs who don't even have the balls to fire. So we load our stuff up and we go to the car. We're leaving. But of course, we went to the Road Warriors first, and we said, listen, Hawk Animal, y'all are Hawk and Animal. This has nothing to do with doing a job for y'all, because, you know, some people's egos, they, you know, and I'm like, listen, you guys are the Road Warriors. Nothing, enough said. This is not about doing a job for you. It's about the way they're doing us. They take the 5 plane tickets back, which means you take $3,000 back from me, plus the bonuses on the pay-per-view, whatever. You see what I'm saying? And that's not okay with me. So we leave the building, and Shawn Michaels comes out, and he's like, Jamie, what's going on, man? I said, man, this is what's going on, Shawn. These jackoffs think that I don't know nothing about it. They're going to try to give me the old, if y'all walk out now, you can never work here again. He'll give me all that shit, man. My daddy made that up when he fired your sorry ass back in 1984. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't want to hear none of that garbage. I'm leaving because I'm not getting beat by these dudes and costing my job in ECW. So then Shawn says, this is what I will do for you, Jamie. I will make sure you get your money for the next 5 shows, you know, for the Monday Night Raws like you're supposed to be if you go to the ring and do this job. And I said, 100%, I believe you. Let's go, Wolfie. We went back in the building. We went to did the little 90-second match with them, and loaded our shit and rolled on out and got paid for the next 5 weeks, thanks to Shawn, because Shawn didn't forget where he came from, you know. He knew that my dad gave him his first job, and he, you know, and that's what happens with most of these people. They get these egos and they forget where they come from, man. You know, Stone Cold never forgot where he came from. He did a show about 5 years ago with Wolfie. Wolfie was building the stage at the awards in Nashville, and Steve was there as the host of the awards. And he's like, where's the damn Dundee? So Whoopi gives Steve my number. Steve calls me and we chat for 2 hours. You know, he never forgets where he came from. You know, he understands what it is to make $25 in a night and it costs 40 to get there and back. You know, you're already 15 in the hole before you left. He understands that because we did it. But that is the passion of the business. Like anything in the football business, you start in the peewees and then you go to the little league and then you go to junior high and then you go to high school and then you go to college. And then from college, you go to the pros. That's, you pay your dues. And the same in the wrestling world. You start out anywhere you can. You work outlaw groups. You work for free, you know, if you, you know, because the passion you have for it. You know, I was Bill Dundee's son, Bobby Eaton's brother-in-law, but that don't matter. I still work for $15 a night, and I still drove 200 miles to make $40. And, you know, because I paid my dues. And that's what you, that's what most people, when you pay your dues, you respect it and you earn it and you love it more. You know, it's a passion. It's not, you know, not to name no names or nothing, but certain people, like if you come from a reality show and then they give you a spot and you're already a spoiled brat because, you know, you already think that you earned it because you didn't earn it. You just got there because you're on a reality show and you're a rating, you know, I mean, I'm just saying in general, you know, anybody that gives the passion and the love for it and will do it for free, no, at any cost, is because they love the business or the sport, no matter what it is, they love it that much. Then definitely when you make it to the top, you appreciate it more. You earned it. You know, it's one of those, I don't know how to explain it to people. It's just, cause you know, in my world, like I said, same week, every week, you got to make them. When you finally stand in that main event and you look around and that building's packed out with the people, you think, I'll be damned. They believe in me, man. I did this. You know, it's totally different than, just coming to town once every 3 months with all the lights and the glamour and drawing the building. And they still got to give away tickets to fill the building up, you know, even then. And to know that you actually drew money in our wrestling business, it's pretty cool ass stuff, man, for real. It's the only sport, I say it's the only sport in the whole world that I can take 16,000 people. I can stand them up. I can sit them down. I can make them cheer. I can make them boo. I can make them laugh and cry anytime I want them to, because I'm that good at my business. It's my sport. It's what I do. When I'm inside that ring right there, that's the freest part in the world I can be. Can't get no freer, because nobody can bother me. Nobody can hurt me. Nobody can get to me. Because that's my world. That's where I'm at. That's where I feel the most comfortable at. And if, you know, people say, if you had a choice and how am I going to die? I want to be right there in the ring, man, getting the 1, 2, 3 and the people popping and it stops my heart. That's how much that world means to me. But then again, on the other side of the coin, I hate it that much too, because 90% of the time, it just don't end good, man. That's the entertainment world in general. You know what I mean? When you can't do nothing for the promoter, you can't make no more money, or if you know anything, they just discard you, man. And that's just, it's a shame. It's kind of like that Iron Claw movie. It pisses me off. They never mentioned Chris Von Erich. They said they didn't mention Chris Von Erich because the producer or the director or whatever that idiot's name is said, because it was too much tragedy. That's what the whole story's about. The whole story's about a family that had so much tragedy, but had so much fame, glory, and money, you know, and why would you leave Chris out, man? That's just a disgrace. It's a shame. And if I was Kevin Von Erich, I'd have smacked that producer in the mouth. And I said, this ain't going to the movies. Cause I mean, that's my little brother, man. That's Chris, you know, and but that's how the wrestling world of the entertainment world is, man. If they don't think you'll draw anything, they just discard you and make another one, man. You know, and that's the only bad part about fame and glory and becoming a star or whatever you want to call it, man, because in the end, man, nobody cares, bro. Nobody but your family.
When you look back, right, and you mentioned Ken Shamrock, you didn't really challenge him, did you?
No, I did. But Ken didn't know who I was. He just knew that some little dude that showed up 9 hours late, laying in the floor, passed out, tore up on whatever, passed out, been laying there for 6 hours, is now sat up, and the first person I see is Ken Shamrock. And so me being the entertaining Jamie Dundee, you know, everybody's sitting around or it's fixing to go live, and I've been up for 5 hours, and I got an $800 cab bill, and, you know, it's Kenny's first day. He's feeling weird anyway, probably. So I just say, what's your name, boy? And he's lacing his boot, and he looks at me like, are you talking to me? And he, I go, yeah, I'm talking to you. He goes, my name's Ken. And he goes back to lacing his boots. So I jump up and I say, Ken, is that what we're supposed to call you around here, Shooter Boy? Because he's got them little bitty tights on, right? And I'm like, Shooter Boy, do you know where you are? This is the WWF where the big boys play. Now everybody's starting to pop, man. They're all starting to look around and thinking, oh, this is going to be great. Well, Kenny don't know Dundee from nobody, but that Dundee's going to eat him up. And so I said, well, come on. I jumped up and I said, come on. Come on, Kenny, Shooter Boy. I said, Horace Gracie done told me you got a weak knee, son. I said, come on in there. Get you some of Dundee. And I throw that leg out there and I make that little stance. I say, this is a WWF where the big boys play. I said, get you some of Dundee, badass. I said, then I told me about you, boy. And so he just like looking around like, are y'all serious? This dude. And so he just stands up and I go, ah. Big old Ken Shamrock gonna beat up little Jamie Dundee. He ended up with a bully, man. I see a bully ass punk gonna beat up Jamie Dundee. And so now he feels he's like, shit. He just sits back down, like, oh my God, what just happened right here? And everybody pops and they all laugh and we go on about our day. And then the next week I see him and I'm like, how are you, sir? Jamie Dundee. He's like, oh, I know. Because I don't really remember that day. I just was told about that day from many, many people throughout life. Gotcha. And as they told me, little pieces of it have came back to me. But, you know, I was just, I should have never been there. But it was just one of them moments that only I could have got away with that. As Wolfie would say, only Dundee could have got away with challenging Ken Shamrock like that. Because, I mean, Ken Shamrock. And speaking of that, see right here, look, I have my UFC autographed Ken Shamrock gloves. Still got it to this day because, you know, he's Ken Shamrock, baby, the world's most dangerous man. But only I could have got away with saying that, I guess, because, you know, he would have just killed most people. But what are you going to do when the guy cowards out? You know, I say, oh, you big old bully, beat up little Jamie Dundee. You badass, ain't you, son? And everybody starts laughing. And he just like, shit, this dude's nuts.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. With ECW, I know you do fight the Dudley Boys on pay-per-view. I know you had a big match with the Eliminators too. Was there supposed to be more in ECW for PG-13?
Yeah, very much so. It was supposed to be, but because we did that 90-second job. And here's another thing that at the time I call Paul Heyman out right there. Now we're fixing to go live Monday Night Raw and Heyman's in the building. I say, Paul, I got a question right now. If we do this job for the Road Warriors, is our job in jeopardy at ECW? What else can he say but no? You know what I mean? If he says yes, then we're going to walk out the building. He's going to get heat for saying, yeah, you see what I'm saying? But at the time, I was hoping he would just tell me the truth and I would have left the building. But because we did the 90-second job for the Road Warriors, the very next week when we fly into ECW, the week before we're in the main event with the Eliminators, that week I'm first match with Mike Dudley. I'm Spike Dudley and Wolfie's second match with Mikey Whipwreck. And I said, oh, shit, man. It was one of those. I don't even know why. I was so smart to the game that it slipped by me, man. I'm like, I can't believe I just let that shit happen. Of course, we shouldn't have done the job for the Road Warriors in 90 seconds because now we're dead on the ECW TV. We, you know, the Road Warriors beat us in 90 seconds. We can't go against the Eliminators and make them people believe, you know, and so shit. But at that moment, I said, Paul Heyman, is my job in jeopardy at ECW? Because if so, fuck this place. I'm out of here. He can't very well say yes, because if he does, then they're going to be, you know what I'm saying? But at the time, it didn't dawn on me. And we did the job in 90 seconds and it was a comedy job and we stole the show and it was funny shit. And the people talk about it still to this day. But also when we flew in the next week, then it dawned on me. Oh, shit. Wolfie, ah, man, we should have did that job. You know what I mean? It's like, yep. God, I knew better. And when I said to Heyman, it's my job. He can't say yes, because if he does, then the ECW invasion thing never, you know what I'm saying? None of that happens just because that's how childish the promoters are in the wrestling business. You know, Heyman should have said, yeah, Dundee, if you do this job, I can't work you against my Eliminators. I'd be like, hell yeah. And we would have left. But then, you know, Vince and him, I don't know. I don't know if it would have even mattered at all. But the point is, he can't tell me yes right there on the spot. He just can't do it. And he never, ever said, Jamie, this is why. I knew as soon as we landed and went to the building, then I got the program and it said first match, JCI versus Spike Dudley. Oh, shit. I know what just happened here. But, you know, that's part of life, you learning experience. But I already knew that. I should have known better to begin with because saw my dad fire many people for things, you know. So I'm like, damn it, I can't believe I let that slip by me, man.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. But definitely, we were supposed to be alive. We were supposed to be. It was going to be the Gangsters, the Eliminators, and us. And I do believe he was going to build it for Public Enemy versus PG-13 because
makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. But then again, to our credit, Paul Heyman one time said, "Never in the history of wrestling is a building ready for Jamie Dundee and Johnny Grunge at the same time." So that will never ever take place. And he said, "I just can't put you two dudes in the same town. I cannot, and I will not be responsible." So I guess me and old Johnny Grunge, we hung out a many nights after the show, you know, them working with somebody else. But I guess I understand where Paul Heyman's coming from. So
can't have you two crazy bastards together. That's
definitely. Definitely JC Ice and Johnny Grunge. We would have tore some shit. It would have been a damn sure would have made CNN news.
Yes.
So
yes,
I understand. Oh, I fully understand.
Now, you guys briefly showed up in WCW late 99, basically early 2000. Was that supposed to be something longer? Because it's like, oh, yes, PG-13's here. And then you guys are gone before I know it.
Yeah, but we're gone because Jarrett's gone and the whole the Russos, they're all gone. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things that once again in life, it depends on what side you take when they, you know, it was Russo and Jarrett. To cut a long story short, me and Wolfie were working security for Rock Solid Security in Nashville, which Wolfie's stepdad ran, Big Pete. We're working security, and so Jeff Jarrett's coming to sell advance tickets to the Nashville Municipal Auditorium for WCW. So I say to Pete, let me and Wolfie guard him. And he's like, what? I said, let us guard him. So when the limo pulls up and Jeff gets out, it's me and Wolfie standing there, and I open the door, follow me, Mr. Jarrett. And he's like, what in the hell are y'all doing? I said, making $10 an hour, sir. Please follow me to your destination. And so we sit with him all day long as he's selling tickets, you know, as the security guys, and we're talking. And so, and of course, once again, I say, Jeff, we're starving to death. He goes, shit, I got y'all a job Monday. We started Monday. That was on a Friday, Monday Night Nitro. We started, but we went in with the Jarrett and then the Russo side. And, you know, they bring back Bischoff and to Jarrett and them are kind of, they lose. So we were on the wrong side. So once again, we were, you know, because they brought everybody to the ring and then they brought Bischoff back and they were going to bond them, you know, they were going to put. Yeah. But then I think Ted Turner said, I'm not spending no more of my money on this garbage. Get rid of all of them. So they closed it down. But I mean, we definitely was, you know, we was going to start the angle with 3 count and we was going to start the angle with the Marmalukes and every. And so then once again, We chose the wrong side. If Dundee would have chose the wrong side in the 70s, we wouldn't have been here anyway. He had the right side. Once again, I chose the wrong side. But I would, if I had to do it again, I would have chose Jarrett and Russo over them too. So it is what it is. But definitely it was, we were supposed to, but the company shut down. I mean, they shut down in 2001, right? Just like right after. I mean, we got hired in 2000. We did every Monday Night Nitro is from the new, they were calling it the new generation or the new whatever, the new blood, something new. Yeah. And sure enough, I think after we left, it closed down in 2 or 3, 4 months, actually, because, you know, I remember Perry Saturn saying, man, you know, that's another guy. He did everything right, except, you know, when Vince bought it up or whatever the hell happened there, you know, he didn't have a spot for him. Guy didn't have nowhere to go, man. Ended up homeless under a bridge. That's a damn shame, man. You know, that's once again that good old wrestling business they just did.
As we hit the wind down, we head towards the finish. Are you done with wrestling? Are you done in the ring? Is there any chance of coming back?
I wrestled last weekend in Blytheville, Arkansas. Doug Gilbert called me and I went and did a show. So, I mean, wrestling, it's all I know. So, I mean, what the hell else am I going to do? I mean, lucky for me, life is good. My home is paid for. My vehicles are paid for. You know, I don't have to get out there and hustle and bust ass every day to try to pay rent or nothing. You know, lucky for me, knock on wood, it wasn't from the wrestling business. But, I mean, everything I got is now paid for, and I don't have to really do nothing but what I want to do, you know. And so I got a couple people I want to plug, like Jimmy Street. He told me to tell you hello. He's an old friend of yours, I think. He told me a few things that I did not know, you used to work with the Dirty Dutchman. Yes. And then I did not know that. Cause like I say, I don't listen to wrestling. I'm not, you know, I lived it, you know, I don't really do it, but there is a big show coming to Evansville, Indiana on May the 10th and 11th. We're having a Lifetime Achievement Award thing for Jerry Lawler, my dad, Dutch Mantell, a handsome Jimmy Vann, and Austin Idol. Secret Headquarters, a guy named Jeff Osborne. If you need tickets or anything like that, you're going to get a hold of him. It's going to be a really big deal. It's a Friday and a Saturday night. It's a two-day ordeal, May the 10th and 11th. We're going to have a roast of Jerry Lawler, the king, you know, and we're going to just give him Lifetime Achievement Awards, because what those five men have done in the wrestling business is it's unfathomable, especially today. Nobody would even understand. Even the wrestlers in it today probably wouldn't understand what Lawler, Dundee, Valiant, you know, Idol, what them guys really did in our sport is with Jerry Jarrett guiding them, of course, is it's pretty unbelievable, man, for real. And so I just wanted to plug that show. Definitely, it's May the 10th and 11th. If you need information on it, just go on Facebook to Secret Headquarters or Jeff Osborne, and he'll give you all the information. It's a 2 or 3 day deal. They got a woman's show. It's a convention style. There's a lot of other guys coming in. I don't want to mention no names because I'm not 100% solid on all the names, but I know he's talked to Kane and Coco and Bret Hart, and The Rock and Stone Cold are going to send in some videos. They can't make it, but they're going to do a video for Lawler and Dunn. You know, so, I mean, it's going to be a big deal. I don't lock in none of them names because I'm not 100% on them, but I'm 80% on what I'm saying, you know, because I'm trying to talk to Jeff. He's going insane trying to run it, because that's what promoters do. They go plumb insane trying to make everybody happy. But anyway, it's going to be a big deal May the 10th and 11th in Evansville, Indiana. So if anybody wants to check it out, man, that's a good place to start. Just Evansville, Indiana, Jeff Osborne, or go to my Facebook page, Jamie Dundee, and it'll be there. So we're going to advertise the hell out of it for the next 6 weeks. And hopefully we can send these guys out with a big bang, man, you know, because what they did for wrestling is it's pretty amazing, man. It's pretty unreal for real.
Some of the all-time greats. Where can everybody find you as far as social media?
You can find me at jamiedundee.com. You can find me at Jamie Dundee on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram at JCIsoPG13. You can find me in Sebree, Kentucky, where I live at my house, because if you just look at all around here behind me, all my stuff on the walls, I got so much wrestling memorabilia from my whole entire life. And there's been a lot of people to just get a hold of me. They come down, they go through my all my boxes of, as my wife calls it, of wrestling shit. And they make piles of it. And they hand me some money and they take it with them. And it's pretty cool, man. I'm pretty flattered to know that anybody even really cared, you know, because it takes a lot of sacrifice to become a star or whatever you want to call it, man. People don't understand, but at the end of the night, them and their families, they go home and they talk about it, and we get on an airplane or we get in a car by ourselves and we travel, you know, hours and hours to go back home. And it's really it's something on both sides of the coin. It's a great feeling to go to that arena and it's sold out, but then when you go home, it's just you, man, you know, and then reality kicks in, and when once you're no good to the entertainment world, they discard you, and then you're just a memory or whatever you want to call it, because it's just so hard to fall from grace, man. But I'm lucky for me, I'm surrounded by my family, my grandchildren, my children. First time in life, I felt at peace with myself and with my life. I mean, really, you know, all them years of entertainment, I loved it, and I wouldn't take nothing for it except this life today, man, because I like being just old Jamie Dundee that just lives at my house and talks about how great he used to be. You know, my kids don't care. My grandkids don't care. They just want to hang out with old Pop, man, which is pretty cool, man. It's something new for me, and it's hard to show me something new in this world, you know.
Yes, for sure. But JC Ice, Jamie, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Man, thank you very much, bro. And I'm flattered after all them stars that you have interviewed. I'm flattered that you would even call a guy like me. But I appreciate it, man. And thank you. And anytime, brother, anytime. Thank you very much.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.